morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Thursday, February the 24th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. African health authorities call for better coordination to ensure COVID-19 vaccines are distributed quickly to Africa.
Global solidarity and proactive leadership is the only way we will beat this virus.
That is Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. A new report says Cameroon's women and children are suffering disproportionately in the country's separatist conflict.
The Ministry of Women's Empowerment and the Family, along with women leaders, stepped up to express their indignation on the murder of their sisters and children by secessionists in the northwest and southwest regions.
And a high court in London begins hearing a $1.7 billion lawsuit filed by the government of Nigeria against U.S. bank J.P. Morgan Chase. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, African health authorities are calling for better coordination to ensure COVID-19 vaccines are distributed quickly to all African nations. Vaccine supplies have surpassed demand for the first time since the pandemic began 2 years ago. But health officials at a conference in Nigeria Wednesday say that a lack of refrigeration and poor infrastructure are major challenges for vaccine equity. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The conference was organized by African Union's Vaccine Delivery Alliance to highlight hurdles many African countries face delivering COVID-19 vaccines to their citizens. Tian Johnson is an African Union community engagement official.
What we see before us through the magnifying glass of COVID-19 are the fruits of decades of deprioritizing health at country level. The fact remains that as Africans, we absolutely must ensure that we leave no one behind.
Just about 20% of Africa's 1.2 billion people have received at least one dose of a coronavirus vaccine, a poor record compared to Western nations like the United States, where up to 70% of the population is fully vaccinated. Many African countries, including Nigeria, lack the infrastructure and cooling systems to store vaccines in large quantities. Last year, up to 1 million doses of COVID vaccines expired in Nigeria, the highest single number in any country. Officials said the vaccination gap is made worse by lack of funding, which limits African countries' ability to properly receive and distribute vaccines. A February publication by COVAX, the global vaccine program supported by the World Health Organization and Gavi, showed low-income countries only requested 100 million doses of vaccines out of 436 million doses available. In Nigeria, where only about 6% of the people are vaccinated, authorities also have been battling widespread vaccine hesitancy, which authorities partly blame for the low inoculation rate. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said this at the conference.
Global solidarity and proactive leadership is the only way we will beat this virus. This high-level summit will call for greater solidarity and for the world to hear Africa's voice on how we can beat this virus together.
Buhari said authorities are accelerating vaccinations in Nigeria to save lives and kickstart economic recovery. The World Health Organization last week said Nigeria and five other African countries will be the first on the continent to begin local production of COVID-19 vaccines. The WHO said training for vaccine production could begin in a matter of weeks. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus was one of the speakers at Wednesday's conference.
WHO and our ACT Accelerator partners are working day and night to address the bottlenecks that remain in partnership with countries. We are on the ground with you to do whatever it takes to reach country goals, not only on vaccines, but for testing and treatment.
Experts say until Africa is largely vaccinated against the virus, the world will remain unsafe. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
A high court in London has begun hearing a lawsuit filed by the government of Nigeria against U.S. bank J.P. Morgan Chase, claiming more than $1.7 billion for its role in a disputed 2011 oil field deal. The civil suit filed in the English courts relates to the purchase of energy majors Shell and Eni of the offshore OPL 245 oil field in Nigeria, which is also the center of ongoing legal action in Italy. A panel of judges in Milan acquitted the companies and executives who all denied any wrongdoing of bribery last year. Then Gambia is urging all judges at the World Court to reject a challenge by Myanmar to a case brought to halt acts of genocide against its Rohingya Muslim minority, saying that the West African state was, quote, no one's proxy. On Monday, Myanmar's junta, which detained civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi in a coup last year, demanded that the United Nations top court drop the case because Gambia was acting as a proxy for others and had no legal standing to file a case. Daybreak Africa continues. Human rights activists say that Cameroon's women and children have suffered disproportionately in the country's five-year separatist conflict. But a report by the International Crisis Group says the role of women has expanded from just being victims to being rebels and peacemakers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports on the recent crisis group report from Yaounde.
Cameroon's Anglophone separatist conflict in the country's western regions has severely impacted women and put them at greater risk of violence. Brussels-based think tank the International Crisis Group, the ICJ, in a report released Wednesday, says women have suffered more than the region's men since armed conflict broke out in 2017. Are Elvis Ntui is the ICG's senior consulting analyst for Cameroon.
Some of the violence women have suffered include kidnapping, rape, torture, and execution. The conflict has destroyed critical medical infrastructure, thereby depriving women of access to health. It has further exposed them to other ills like trafficking and sexual exploitation. The authorities should prosecute those who are responsible for crimes and include women in a peace process. But separatists must also ensure an effective end to the school sabotage and stop the practice of requiring women to serve them in their camps.
Cameroon's separatist groups deny abusing women and say that some women have joined their forces freely. Capo Daniel is deputy defense chief of the Ambazonia Defense Forces, ADF, one of the biggest rebel groups in Cameroon.
It is unfortunate that the crisis group will target the Ambazonian forces for something that is not well substantiated. There have been no circumstances where women have been seen in our camps against their will. There are members within our forces who are women, who are volunteer.
Rights activists accuse government troops of abusing women too, though officials deny it. Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ondua is Cameroon's Minister of Women's Empowerment and the Family. She says Cameroon is working with female peace campaigners in initiatives to end the conflict.
The Ministry of Women's Empowerment and the Family, along with women leaders, stepped up to express their indignation on the murder of their sisters and children by secessionists in the northwest and southwest regions. The government has made the promotion of the human rights of all citizens a major concern.
More than 1,000 Cameroonian women converged in Yaounde last August for a first-ever peace convention to try to end the conflict. They asked rebels and government troops to lay down their guns so peace could return to the restive regions, but fighting has continued. Violence erupted in Cameroon's western regions in 2017 after English-speaking teachers and lawyers protested against discrimination by the country's French-speaking majority. The military responded with a crackdown and separatists took up arms. The United Nations says about 3,500 people have been killed and at least 700,000 displaced, with women and children the most affected. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The UN peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic has rejected accusations that four of its personnel, who were arrested Monday, were engaged in suspicious activity. The CAR's public prosecutor says the four men arrested at the airport shortly before the arrival of the country's president were heavily armed. Caro Valade has more from the capital, Bangui.
The UN peacekeeping mission, known as MINUSCA, is demanding the release of the four peacekeepers, all French soldiers. CAR authorities have not filed any charges against the men, but the country's public prosecutor said on national radio that an investigation is open on the case. He said the four men were arrested aboard a suspicious vehicle carrying a heavy military arsenal. Right after the arrest, messages on social media accused the peacekeepers of planning to assassinate CAR President Faustin Archange Touadéra, whose plane was about to land at the airport. MINUSCA spokesperson Vladimir Monteiro dismissed the accusation during a press conference on Wednesday.
Nous n'avons rien à cacher. La MINUSCA est là comme partenaire, est là comme ami.
We have nothing to hide, he said. MINUSCA is here as a partner, as a friend. What's said on social media is disinformation. Montero said MINUSCA regrets the incident on Monday, February the 21st, and condemns again the intent to manipulate public opinion and firmly rejects the accusations of attacking state security. The four military personnel remain in police custody, but they are being treated well, says a source at the UN peacekeeping mission. The CAR government has refused to comment the case. Carole Valade for VOA News, Bangui, Central African Republic.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Malawi and UN agencies are launching an emergency response to the country's polio outbreak, the first in Africa in 5 years. The plan includes mass immunization of children under 5 years of age and intensive surveillance to prevent the virus from spreading further. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The move comes a few days after the country declared a national health emergency after a three-year-old child was paralyzed by the virus, which is the same strain found in Pakistan. Enoki Pale is Deputy Minister of Health in Malawi. He told a press conference in the capital, Lilongwe, Tuesday that despite the fact that the strain is imported, there is need for a swift action against its spread.
We're doing whatever we can to make sure that we break the infectious circle. And one of them is to bring the public awareness, because its root of infection are two, being water and food. The disease is a disease provoking sin and affect everybody, including even our neighbors.
Malawi last reported a polio case in 1992. The country was declared polio-free in 2005, 15 years before the African continent was declared polio-free. The emergency response plan includes a rollout of mass vaccination campaign for all children under 5 years of age and disease surveillance across the country. Dr. Janet Kaita is country representative for WHO in Malawi.
But the specific outbreak response is a national immunization campaign targeting all children aged under 5 with the polio vaccine, which is 2 oral drops, and it will be repeated again in a second round. But what is really, really key is that every under 5, wherever they are reached. So that includes in the districts worst affected by Tropical Storm Anna.
So far, a team of experts and rapid response teams from a non-profit, the Global Polio Eradication Initiative, have arrived in Malawi. The organization, based at the WHO regional office in Africa, says it aims to support coordination, case tracking, data management, communications, and operations. The Ministry of Health says other partner organizations, such as UNICEF, USA CDC and Africa CDC have also started sending teams to support emergency operations and innovative vaccination campaign solutions. Like many other countries in the world, Malawi provides a polio vaccine that targets type 1 and type 3 of the polio virus, following the eradication of polio virus type 2 many years back. However, WHO says research into the new case in Malawi has shown that the three-year-old child has type 1 and that the child was not fully vaccinated against the disease. No reason is given for failure to complete the polio vaccine, but some health experts cite pandemic-related preventive measures such as social distancing as factors adding to the challenge in getting children vaccinated. Malawi's community health ambassador, Maziko Matemba, suggests the need to empower community healthcare workers with the skill to identify polio cases.
The community system structure needs to be operating, because maybe you can observe our community health workers, if not, maybe they're not well supported, maybe they were not able to identify that we have a problem of an unvaccinated individual in the community, which I think has got this.
According to the Ministry of Health, authorities are now working to finalize the budget for all activities to be submitted to the Global Polio Eradication Initiative and other partners for funding the implementation of the emergency response plan, expected to start in 4 or 6 weeks' time. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Parts of the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have been hit by a series of brutal attacks this month, with scores left dead and hundreds of people displaced. Many of the attacks are blamed on CODECO militants, who primarily attack communities of the ethnic Hema people. CODECO, or the Cooperative for the Development of Congo, is mostly made up of people from Lendu ethnic communities, and its leaders say the fighters were responding to attacks by Hema militia. The Eastern DRC has been plagued by violence for decades. And early this week, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres and Under Secretary General for Peace Operation Jean-Pierre Lacroix were in the country. Journalist Jafar Al-Katante in Goma has been covering the attacks and the UN visit. Spoke with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson for an update on the situation.
Last week was very dangerous for people in South Kivu, in Minembwe area and in Ituri. This time, North Kivu was a bit safe than Ituri and South Kivu. But Ituri was the danger place one, where many attacks on civilian and even at some IDPs camps.
Now, who is thought to have been responsible for these attacks?
In Ituri, there are many militias, but two of them are the most in operation, as the CODECO militia, who is Lendu Armed Group, and the Islamist ADF. All attacks were claimed by CODECO against Hema people. According to CODECO, it's because a Hema militia called Zaire attacked their position, killed locals. That's why CODECO also used the same way to response to as a protection deal to his people. The government of DRC sent a team of many Ituri leaders in the Jugu region to talk with rebels. And when that team reached CODECO area, they were kidnapped.
So CODECO is demanding that it get a ransom for these Ituri regional leaders and that the government in the state of siege. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
There's been a big visitor this week in the region. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was there. Tell us a little about his trip.
Antonio Guterres came in DRC to talk with government about regional cooperative against all militia, and he was also, he had also to visit a new big ID camp where many people from other ID camp, IDPS camp, went to stay near a MONUSCO camp. But he didn't visit the camp because of the problem of in Ukraine. He had to return back in New York to meet some Russia and U.S. authorities. But his deputy, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, reached the area, talked to locals, visit the camp, and also talked to journalists.
Now, you were on the trip to the IDP camp, and this camp, as you were saying, is people who have been fleeing the recent attacks, and some people have come from internally displaced persons camps that the militias had attacked. What are conditions like there at the camp?
The conditions are not good socially, but securitily, let's say they are best, because the camp is just near a UN forces camp. So people flee from many other camps and their villages to stay there near MONUSCO, because they know that CODECO can't attack a MONUSCO base, but they still need everything, food and sanitation. The Deputy Secretary General of UN recognized that and said the world must know that people in Ituri need help, need support, and we have to support them.
That was reporter Jaffa Alkatante in Goma. He was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. Thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. 50 years ago, U.S. President Richard Nixon took a key step to normalizing relations between Washington and China. Nixon's historic trip to three Chinese cities was the first time a U.S. president had visited the People's Republic of China. It ended 25 years of diplomatic isolation. The state of relations 50 years hence, that's Encounter, next Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the announcement of sanctions against Russia by the United States and its allies in response to President Vladimir Putin's move to recognize Russian-occupied regions in eastern Ukraine as independent states. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.